Chapter 3. When he woke up, he was flat on his back, with three hard white suns shining into his eyes, and a tall figure standing over him. The figure was a shadow, silhouetted by the clustered suns. Although he knew Ravener could never be a figure, an upright figure, not any more, he was sure that was who it was. It was big and strong, and it was assured. Perhaps this was some lingering part of the strange things that had been done to his mind. The figure reached up a hand and, with a casual godlike gesture, swung the suns aside in the sky. With their light tipped away, he realized they were not suns, after all. Just a bank of chrome-hooded photolumen surgical lamps on a multipoise armature. And the figure wasn't Ravener, or the God Emperor. It was Zeph Mathewin. The bodyguard was naked, except for a pair of white drawstring shorts and a heavy packing of surgical dressings strapped across his broad torso. Thonius could see the entirety of Mathewin's left arm, the polished mechanisms of a chrome-plated augmetic limb. He could see the old scars where silver metal and caramel flesh folded into one another at the shoulder. He thought of his own arm and the stuff you know.
"He's awake," Mathewin said, and turned away.
Ravener hovered his chair across the infirmary to Thonius's bedside. "Carl?" Zarjaran, the medike, appeared from somewhere and checked the diagnostic displays above the head of the cot.
"My head hurts," Thonius said,
his voice sounding to him like it was coming out of distant speakers.
"Naturally," said Zarjaran.
"I want to sit up."
Zarjaran reached up to a dangling control box and elevated Thonius's cot into a half-recline. Thonius looked around the room. He'd never been a patient in the Hinterlights infirmary before, except for periodic health checks and shots prior to planet visits. Ravener was there in front of him, his armored shell giving nothing away. Mathewin had crossed back to his own rumpled cot and was sitting on its edge, sucking drink from a flask through a plastic straw. There was an overwhelming smell of counterseptic wash.
"I'm sorry," Thonius said.
"For what?" Ravener asked.
"The mess."
"Things happen in the field, Carl. I'm just glad you're alive."
Thonius felt as if he might burst into tears. He breathed hard and felt the tension pull at sutures. He didn't dare look down at his right arm. He wanted Ravener to mind-speak so he could hear his real voice and tone and inflection instead of that bloodless, emotionless voxponder. But he didn't know if his splitting, psi-abused mind could take it.
"You and Kiss got me out."
"We did," said Ravener. "I'm sorry I had to wear you like that. I would normally ask permission of a friend first, and I don't like to wear someone who's not experienced it before. But it was a necessity."
"It was peculiar," said Thonius.
In truth, he could remember little about it. The memory of pain eclipsed just about everything else. But he had a feeling of being stretched from within, hollowed out. He was exhausted.
"I'm exhausted too," Ravener said. "It saps me, especially over such a distance, and in such traumatic circumstances."
Thonius swallowed.
"My arm. Where is my arm?"
"Back where it should be," said Zarjaran.
Thonius looked down at himself for the first time. His entire right arm was swathed in dressings, with many drug shunt tubes and wound drains curling out of it. But they were his fingers protruding from the binding gauze.
"We were able to reattach it," the medike began.
"Dr. Zarjaran is being modest," said Ravener. "He spent 16 hours on you with microservitors." Zarjaran bowed his head slightly.
"It's early days, interrogator," he said, "but I think the regraft is taking. You might have some long-term loss of function, but the injury was surprisingly clean."
"Be thankful," Mathewin growled, "that the men of the Slaughter Guild take pride in keeping their blades astonishingly sharp."
Thonius tried to flex his fingers, but he could not. Then he looked up.
16 hours, you said. How long have I been out?"
2 days, said Ravener.
"What have I missed?"
"Little.
Nail and Kara are on the surface, looking for Siskind. I withdrew everyone else. everyone who might have been connected to the incident.
What about Kinski and his friends?
I've yet to talk to them, said Ravenna. He's making them sweat, said Mathewin.
Someone was crying. Zale could hear the sobbing sound echoing up through the habstack. It was still dark, early. He got out of his little cot into the pre-dawn chill and crept out of the back room he shared with his sister. Nove's bed was empty. She hadn't been back that night. Granna was asleep in the family room, snoring a phlegmy snore. Zale could smell the sharp stink of glue. There was a light on, a single glow-globe over the cupboard. It illuminated the little effigy of the god emperor that Granna kept there. The sobbing wasn't Granna either, though it had been on many nights. It was coming from outside. The stack landing. Zale padded forward, through the kitchen, to the door. Through the frosted glass, he could see a figure pressed against the door, head bowed. He could hear the ragged sobbing now. He could even see how each sob gusted brief condensation over the other side of the glass.
Nove?
The crying continued.
Sis? Is that you?
More sobs.
Nove? What's happened?
The crying ebbed. A bare hand splayed flat against the glass, pressed tight, imploring.
Nove, you're scaring me.
The door handle turned slowly and released. It did it again. Zale saw the deadbolt was thrown.
Let me in.
Nove, answer me. Is it you?
Let me in, Zale.
Zale remembered the stories going round the stack. Raiders, in the night, knocking up poor families, breaking in. There was nothing to steal here. But, the stories said, the raiders didn't just want to steal.
Nove!
Zale, let me in.
You're not my sister,
Zale said, backing away. He looked around for a weapon. There was a blunt paring knife on the sink edge. He grabbed it.
Something to tell you.
What?
Something he needs to know.
Who?
Let me in. He must know.
Go away!
The handle turned again. Then the knurl of the deadbolt began to rattle to and fro.
Go away!
The deadbolt began to slide back.
Go away!
Zale yelled.
Granna, come quick! Granna!
But, oh, now that was right. His Granna was dead. And this was all... The bolt slunked back, and the door began to open. Zale shrieked.
Kiss slapped his cheek hard, and he fell onto the metal deck.
"What the hell's the matter with you, boy?" she said.
Zale looked up at her, blinking. He was in the corridor. The door to his cabin was open behind him, and he dragged most of his bedroll cover out into the hallway after him. he began.
"I was asleep, and I heard you screaming,"
Kiss said harshly. Then she sighed and crouched down beside him.
"I'm sorry. I didn't want to hit you. I didn't know what else to do."
He said again.
"I had a bad dream."
"Right."
Involuntarily, Zale wrapped his arms tight around Kiss. She flinched and went stiff. Slowly, though gently, she pried his arms away from her.
"Look, boy, I'm not a people person."
"My name's Zale."
"Yeah, I knew that. Zale."
Kiss nodded, though until that moment she'd been struggling to remember the kid's name.
"You had a bad dream. We all do. Damn, you want to try being Psy. Then you get bad dreams you didn't order."
She became aware he was staring up at her. He looked so young.
"It's fine. Honestly," she said. "Want to tell me about it?"
"It was my sister."
"Throne, Zale, I have sisters. I know how scary that can be."
"My sister is dead."
"Oh."
"She was knocking on my door. She wanted to come in."
"Right. Real nightmare stuff. I've had shit, you..."
She stopped and looked at him again.
"You don't want to hear that. You need to sleep. Come on."
She rose and hoisted him up.
"Pick up your bedding," she said.
He scooped his bedroll up. She led the way into his cabin. He shrank back when he saw she'd pulled a dagger.
"What's that for?"
"Shh," she said, a finger to her lips. Warily, she looked under the cot, then threw open the closet, then leapt into the shower room, blade raised.
"Just checking for monsters. None here. It's safe."
He smiled.
"That was really silly," he said.
She shrugged and sheathed her blade.
"Frigate. I said I wasn't a people person. Go to bed."
"Okay."
"And next time you have a bad dream."
"Yes."
"Wake some other bastard, will you?"
"Okay."
Kiss walked out of Zale's cabin and shut the hatch. She was about to turn away when she paused. She stretched out a long finger and ran the tip of it through the thawing film of frost that surrounded the hatch frame. She felt the unmistakable buzz of psychic energy. She walked quickly back to her own cabin and activated the intership fox.
"Ravana!"
"Make it quick. I'm busy," Ravana said.
He was gliding down the main dorsal corridor of Deck 3. Kiss had to double time to keep up.
"It's the boy."
"Zale?"
"Yeah, Zale."
"What about him?"
"He's borderline psi. Maybe nascent. Growing, too."
"I know."
"You know?"
"Patience, why in the name of terror would I have brought him from Eustace and made him welcome here if I didn't think he had potential?"
"Well, I wondered."
"The boy was picking my transmissions up on Eustace Majoris. He's clearly sharp. I want to examine him further, when time permits."
Kiss nodded.
"But if he's sharp, he could be dangerous. Shouldn't you hand him over to the black ships for processing?"
"No. He's sharp, but he's passive sharp. Not active. I can read that much. He's a reflector, an echoer. I don't think he's going to turn into a Kinski or a Ravana. But I want to know what he's absorbed. Recorded, if you will. Of all the flecked users we traced on Eustace, he was the only psyker."
"I think he could be trouble," Kiss said.
Ravana swung his bulky chair round to face her.
"I think so too, Patience. But I'll decide. It's my call. He's here because I say so."
"All right."
"Now, go away," Ravana said.
"Why?"
"Because I'm about to speak with the Ministry agents, and I don't want you to kill them."
"Fine,"
she said, and strode away. The hatch hissed open, and Ravana hovered through. A Henobarb was sitting at the end of the long conference table, his chin on his arms. Kinski was leaning back in his seat, flicking nuts from a bag up into his mouth. Lost kernels dotted the floor. Madsen rose as Ravana entered.
"This is cooperation," she said.
"Shut up and sit down."
Madsen sat down immediately, as if struck. Kinski flicked another nut into the air. It missed his mouth. Without looking at Ravana, he said,
"Pull another side play like that, Inquisitor, and I will face you down. Do you understand me?"
He flicked another nut. It went up, and then hovered in the air over his open mouth.
"I believe it's you who must come to understand the way of things now, Kinski. You are here to help, not to lead. To advise, not to demand. This is my ship. You are guests. This is my case. You are allies of the Inquisition."
Ravana let the nut fall. Kinski flicked it aside with his hand and got up.
"Very slick. Very tough. You want to go now? You and me?"
"Sit down, Kinski,"
Madsen snapped.
"You and me, you frigging crip."
"Sit down, Kinski, now,"
Madsen shouted. Kinski sat.
"Inquisitor," Madsen said, "I wish to apologize for the actions of my team. Kinski's confrontation just then was out of line, but I'm sure you know how volatile it can be with psychers."
Ravana stayed silent, so Madsen went on.
"On the surface, our procedures. I understand they sparked a situation, and that resulted in injury to one of your team."
"It did."
"How is Interrogator Thonius?"
"Alive. Reunited with his arm."
Madsen leaned forward. Her eyes were clear and honest.
"I'm glad. Inquisitor, may I talk with you privately?"
"Perhaps. Just be happy I didn't allow Agent Kiss to attend this meeting. She would have killed all three of you."
"She would have tried,"
Ahenobarb chuckled. Then he froze and reached towards his neck, gagging. Ravenna released him. She would have succeeded. I have never known anyone as murderous as Patience Kiss. You three would be awful by now if I'd let her have her way. Madsen, outside. Madsen rose. Swinging round, Ravenna gazed back at Kinski. You bested me before, Mr. Kinski. Well done. But you were right there, and I was at my range limit from orbit. Do not for one moment, expect a rematch to be so easy. I will burn out your mind in an instant. Whatever, said Kinski. The nut he had just thrown up turned in midair, shivered, and smacked off his cheek with a bulleting force. Whatever, indeed, said Ravenna. Whiston Frauke was waiting for them outside. Madsen shivered as she sealed the door behind them and faced Ravenna. Whiston, Ravenna said politely. Frauke deactivated his limiter. He plucked a low stick from his card pack and lit it, looking bored. Ravenna faced Madsen. No more chances, Mademoiselle Madsen. You work with me, or I ditch you.
I understand. Kinski is a loose cannon, and—
No, he is not. He is a powerful psyker who should be enclosed in the bosom of the Guild Astropathicus, and not freelanced as a governmental pawn. Ahenobarb is just a minder. You, to me, are the mystery.
Me?
She said. You, Madsen. You are clearly in charge of this ministry team. I know why I should be wary of the psyker and his brute minder. But they answer to you. Therefore, you worry me.
I assure you.
I don't even know your given name.
Lucinda Madsen. Happy now?
No. Work with me in all manner of effort, Lucinda Madsen, or I will eject you and your allies into the void.
She straightened up and faced him. You would not dare. I am here by the authority of the Lord Subsector.
Yes, you are. I am here by the authority of the Ordo's Helican. This far out, on the verges of lucky space, who would know? Who would care if I had you three voided from an air gate?
Lucinda Madsen smiled then. She said, I think we understand each other, sir.
But Ravenna thought, a smile. What a strange reaction. There he is, said Nail. He opened the chipped driver's door window of the Cargo 8 they sat in so they could get a better look across the crowded street.
You sure? Kara asked.
Nail nodded. It had taken him a few hours of quiet questions and a roll of never-to-be-seen-again cash to get the skinny on Shipmaster Siskind from the traders in Tusk Verge. Trade custom along the western banks was notoriously tight-lipped, as Kiss's team had discovered, and Nail and Kara had found on their own foray north. The Moot Coast prided itself on being just outside rigid Imperial law, and was never happy to be pumped for answers. But the uproar during the Moot had changed that. Ironically, Nail had benefited from the mess Thonius had been at the center of. The locals were in mortified disarray. The Slaughter Baron had suspended trading. There was unrest and rancor. The off-world traders felt edgy and vulnerable suddenly, not knowing whether to risk waiting until the Moot reopened, or to get out while they were still able. What's more, a shipman had been murdered in the firefight. As a result, the traders were closing ranks and exchanging protective gossip, tipping one another off to Slaughterman Guild inspections. Nail's questions had seemed just part of that process.
That's Siskind, definitely. Red hair, glass jacket, pale tan ATV with red panels on the mudguards.
He's rolling, said Kara.
Nail saw it. He turned the Cargo 8's engine over, got a throaty rev or two, and then edged out from the street side after the tan ATV as it nudged down the thoroughfare through the bustling pedestrians. The morning was cold and set fair. An emaciated lemon sun ached through the flat grey sky over the shore. There was a strong wind in off the sea. The town of Tusk Verge seemed dismal and bleak, filled up with people who had no wish to be there. Siskind's ATV turned east through the town and followed the walled roads up towards the commerce fields. It picked up a little speed as it left behind the more crowded streetways.
Not too close, Kara said.
Oh, please.
Still, he idled back and allowed a trader's articulated cargo 12 and a billowing dung wagon to get in between their vehicle and the ATV. The dung wagon turned off towards the highway viaduct. A few minutes later, the cargo 12 pulled to the right and grumbled down a causeway into the eastern loading docks of the moot pens. Nail drove on through their dust and followed Siskin's ATV out onto the windswept commerce fields that occupied the high pastures above the moot town. Here, even during the day, campfires burned, marking out landing plots along with heavy-duty mechanized beacon posts that had been hammered into the dry soil. On almost all of the wide plots sat a freighter, cargo doors agape. Inter-orbit lifters of every size and design were ranged along the commerce field plots, often with small flyers and landers parked next to them. Crews lounged about, bored, smoking, drinking. Nail eased back again, as if he was about to turn into one of the plots. The ATV bellied on ahead, heading up to the north end of the landing field. They followed, slowly. The tan ATV turned right and slewed to a halt in front of the jaw doors of an ancient bulk lifter that sprawled across its appointed plot like a wallowing hippo. Its entire rust-riveted bulk was raised from the scorched ground on six vast hydraulic legs. Nail pulled them over, and they sat and watched. The ATV drove up to the foot of the bulk lifter's ramp and paused, allowing Siskind to jump down. Sunlight flashed on the links of his glass jacket. As he began to converse with the Dynast-appointed landerman, the ATV revved again and nosed up into the belly of the lifter. Expressing steam, the vehicle's huge cargo doors began to close.
"He's leaving," Kara said.
"Let's go," agreed Nail.
Nail killed the engine, and they jumped out either side of the truck. Siskind was still arguing with a local plot official. A dispute over landing tariffs, perhaps. Kara and Nail ran up along the adjacent plot, keeping a battered old Latimar Ind bulker between them and Siskin's lifter. It was a long run. Each plot was about 300 meters long. By the time they had reached the far end of the plot and had turned in and behind Siskin's vessel, it was raising thrusters and sealing for takeoff. Siskin, distant now, was turning from the argument with a dismissive shrug and heading for the gangway. He jogged his way up it and sealed the hatch behind him. The automated gangway retracted into the bulk lifter's flank, and heat shield armor extruded to cover its socket. The roar of the lifter's power plant rose abruptly by a factor of 10. There was a fierce downrush of jetted air and agey repulsion that Kara and Nail could feel even from the edge of the plot. It was suddenly like trying to walk into a gale. Dust and dry grass kicked up in a blizzard. The lifter began to rise arduously into the air, creating a heat haze distortion between itself and the soil. Shielding his face, Nail raised the heavy gauge coil bow he'd been carrying and aimed it up at the ship, into the deluge. Kara shouted something he couldn't hear. He pulled the trigger and fired the bow, feeling the solid kick of the coil spring. A direct hit impacted on the belly line of the ascending cargo ship, a direct hit that went completely unfelt by the ship's crew. The bowshot load had been custom-made, a wad of adhesive suspension coating a disc of very special material. Wraithbone. Siskin's lifter rose into the morning air, nose dipped, gouted black smoke, swung heavily to its left, and then turned and began to climb on full downthrust. Its burner flares blue-white. Rapidly, it became just another dot leaving a contrail in the flat grey sky. Nail keyed his link.
"Mr. Hallstrom."
"Mr. Nail?"
The Vox contact crackled.
"On your scopes, I trust."
"Tracking it now."
The Allure broke orbit 5 hours later. It performed a smooth series of mass velocity transactions and turned out, sliding effortlessly away from the shoal of anonymous rogue trade ships at high anchor above Flint. To all intents, it was just as anonymous as the rest. None of the trade ships chose to identify themselves electronically. But Hallstrom's scopes had followed the bulk lifter to it. It was most certainly the Allure. It powered clear of Flint's gravity trap, bending its course rimward and under the elliptic plane. Cloaked behind extremely non-standard disguise fields, another ship went with it. The Allure was 9 astronomical units from Flint and accelerating towards its encoded translation point when its master finally became aware he had a problem. Bartol Siskind had taken off his jacket of vitrian glass and hung it over the back of his command seat. The Allure's bridge was capacious but low-ceilinged. Much of the flight deck instrumentation extended down from the ceiling over the raked crew stations. Siskind took a sip of caffeine and leaned back to study his master display. He had already received a signal to go from his engineerium, and his course had been plotted and laid down by his navigator. All systems were functioning well within parameters, and he was getting a particularly fine output rhythm from the principal drive. He reached up and touched a few runes on the screen, tuning tiny expert adjustments into the mass drive regulators. "Translation point in 11 minutes. Accelerating," the navigator intoned calmly from the adamite crypt recessed into the deck in front of him. Siskind nodded and turned to Ornalis, his first officer, about to order him to stow for warp space. Ornalis sat at the position next to him, his face downlit by the massive overhead console that arched down over his raked-back seat. By the light of the dancing green glow, Siskind could see a perplexed expression on his number one's face.
"What? Are you getting that?" Ornalis asked.
Frowning, Siskind looked up at his own master display. A new dialogue box had appeared on top of the scrolling system data. It wasn't especially large. It said, "Cut your engines now."
"What the hell?"
Siskind tried to clear it. It wouldn't cancel.
"Is this a damn joke?"
"It's external," Ornalis replied, his voice tense. His hands were dancing over his mainboard.
"External source. Picked only communication."
"But there's nothing in range," Siskind said.
He activated the return mode and typed, "Identify." The box blinked. "Cut your engines and heave to now." "Identify now," Siskind wrote angrily. There was a brief pause. Then the box blinked again and read, "Heave to. Depower and drop to coasting. By order of the Inquisition. Do not make me cripple your ship, Siskind." Once the Allure had coasted down, the outlets of the huge drive assemblies at its stern glowing frosty pink as potential power descaled, the hinterlight made itself visible. The Allure was a medium-sized sprint trailer of non-standard design, heavily modified during its long life. It was long, craggy, and bulky, its only concession to elegance the long chevrons of armor ridging its prow like the steel toe-cap of a pointed boot. The hinterlight was somewhat smaller and a great deal sleeker, shaped like a blade, with the flared bulk of its drive section at its stern. It flickered menacingly into view, appearing on Siskin's sensor panels a few seconds before it was eye-visible. A combination of Xeno-derived technology and Ravenna's own mental strength generated the disguise field. It was a system that Ravenna would be forced to have removed from the hinterlight if his arrangement with Priest wound up. As it visibly manifested, the hinterlight tracked its primary batteries to target the Allure. Priest made damn sure the Allure's systems got a clear indication of multiple target lock. Neither ship was military, neither an outright fighting vessel, but they were both rogue traders, and where rogue traders went, a decent level of firepower was a professional asset. Siskin's response, just as obvious, was to make sure his batteries were both depowered and stowed, and his targeting system offline. It was a clear submissive gesture, an indication of compliance. Even out here, just a few days' voyage from Lucky Space, no one fooled around when the Inquisition called the tune. An armored transport shuttle, little more than a gig, dropped down out of the hinterlight's belly hangar, ignited its thrusters in a blaze of blue light, and went flitting across the silent gulf towards the Allure. As it approached the other ship and became dwarfed by its great, battered bulk, guide path lights began to pulse sequentially along the Allure's flank. The gig zipped along after them, tracking in close to the merchantman's scarred hull, and arrived at a hangar dock where the outer hatches and blast curtains were slowly gliding open. The gig paused, adjusted its attitude with a tight burst of point thrusters, and slid inside. The resealed hangar was thick with swirling exhaust smoke and hydraulic steam. There was a loud, repetitive hazard buzzer sounding, almost drowned out by the huge atmospheric fans under the deck. The echoing buzzer finally cut off, and the flashing warning lamps ceased. Overhead floods kicked on and illuminated the gig where it rested on its landing skids in the middle of the primary platform. Several other interorbital craft, including the scabby bulk lifter Nail had tagged, were berthed in lock cradles off the platform, connected up to ropes of heavyweight fuel and system fluid lines. An internal hatch hissed open, and Siskin strode out into the vast hangar, flanked by three senior members of his crew. They were all armed, and made no effort to disguise the fact. Siskin was wearing his glass-weave jacket, and a bolt pistol hung in a holster at his hip. Two of his comrades were human, a tall, dark-haired man and a shorter, older, balding fellow, both carrying wire-stocked las carbines. The third was a Neculi, slender and humanoid, but with long spine scales flowing back from his scalp. The Neculi's eyes were white slits, his nose virtually absent, his lower jaw thrust forward. Two thin fangs hooked up from this underbite over his top lip. Like all Neculi, he walked with a hunch-shouldered waddle. The four walked out onto the platform, knee-deep in the repressurization fog still wreathing the deck, and came to a halt 10 meters from the gig. Siskind cleared his throat. He looked edgy and pissed off. The cabin hatch on the side of the gig retracted in three segmented sections. Ravenna's chair hovered out and sank down to deck level, facing the shipmaster. With a little hiss that made the dark-haired man jump, the chair displayed its hololithic rosette.
"I'm Siskind, master of this vessel," Siskind said carefully. "My papers and my letter of marque as an Imperial Free Trader are in order. If you wish, you may inspect them." "Like all true servants of the throne," Siskind stressed that part, "I have every desire to cooperate and assist the Ordo's Officio Inquisitoris. May I inquire, is this a random inspection?"
"No," replied Ravenna. "I am Gideon Ravenna, Inquisitor, Ordo Xenos Helicon. I am hunting a ship called the October Country, a ship that I know has had contact with you in the last week."
Siskin shrugged and chuckled. "You're after information. That's it. You inconvenience me in the pursuit of my business for information. Am I accused of any crime?"
"No," said Ravenna. "But withholding information from an authorized agent of the Inquisition is a crime. So I advise you to be thoughtful about your next statement."
Siskin shook his head.
He was a handsome man, but there was an unpleasantly cruel set to his features.
"I know the October Country, but I've had no contact with it, not even seen it for, what, 3 years? There is my information. Now remove yourself from my ship."
"You are in no position to make demands," said Ravenna. "My ship
will hardly fire on mine with you aboard. I hate to play games, but it was easier to let you aboard. Does the concept of hostage mean anything to you?"
"Oh, absolutely," said Ravenna.
"Shit!"
cried the dark-haired man suddenly. Off to their left, Harlan Nails stood in the knee-deep fog, a heavy automatic pistol aimed at them in a two-handed grip. Siskind jumped back. To his right, Kara Swole had an assault cannon on them. "And behind you," Ravenna added. All four turned. Mathewin smiled. The barrel cluster of his rotator cannon cycled menacingly. Siskind and his men had been so intent on Ravenna they'd not even noticed the others slip out under cover of the deck fog from the other side of the gig.
"I was being polite," said Ravenna, "but we will play it your way. Harlan?"
Nail fired a single shot and blew off the balding man's left kneecap. Hit, the man fell onto the deck, shrieking and writhing.
"I think that's established the ground rules," Ravenna said. "Now, let's get to business." I had no desire to waste time. Exposing all of the Allure's secrets would have taken months of painstaking research. It was a big, old ship, its history, manifests and logged records lousy with all manner of dubious deals, illegal transactions and outright crimes. Like any rogue trader, in fact. I'd never seen Priest's ship log, and she'd never volunteered it to me. It was the fundamental understanding of which our relationship was based. Rogue traders, even the best of them, tested the limits of throne law. Don't ask and you won't be disappointed. All I'd required of Priest was that she keep her activities clean all the while we were associated. My worthy long-departed master Gregor Eisenhorn had once told me that if you examine any one man, any group of men, any institution, or any world long enough, you will uncover something untoward. I am proud of the achievements of the Imperium and the virtues of its society, but I am not naive. There is corruption, and crime and heresy everywhere. It is endemic. To operate successfully, an inquisitor must learn to be selective, to focus on the principal matters of his current case. To do otherwise leads to stagnation and failure. Thus, I ignored the 48 freight tariff evasions the Allure had notched up. I ignored the conviction for grievous assault First Officer Ornales had evaded on Caxton. I turned a blind eye to the fact Siskind had a fugitive murderer working amongst his Engenarium crew, and also to the fact that his ship's surgeon had been disbarred from practice due to gross anatomical misconduct. I passed over the 15 illegal or prohibited weapons carried aboard the ship, the largest two of which were battery-mounted on the hull. I didn't even care about the consignments of yellows, gladstones, and grinweed we dug out of cavity spaces. I concentrated on Flecks, the October country, and on Fever Sko, and Kizari Thekla. The Allure had a crew of 78, 30 more than the Hinterlight. I examined each one in turn, shaking all kinds of petty crime and misdemeanors out of their heads. Meanwhile, Nail oversaw the physical sweep of the ship, and Thonius, from his bed in the Hinterlight's infirmary, conducted a data purge of the Allure's systems.
"Sir?"
"Go ahead, Carl."
"There's virtually nothing in the Allure's files to link it to the October country. A handful of trade meetings. But I have traced an astropathic communique received the day after the October country left Eustis Primaris. It's filed and logged uncoded. From Thekla. It says what we already know. Asks Siskind to make his apologies to Baron Carquin."
"Thank you, Carl. Keep searching."
"Sir, the message ends with a curious sign-off. Firetide drinks as usual."
"Repeat that."
"Firetide drinks as usual. Mean anything?"
"Sweep our data core for the term Firetide. It could indicate an event or time when Thekla and Siskind next intended to meet face to face."
"That's what I thought, sir."
"Good work, Carl. How's the arm?"
"Still attached to me. Mr. Hallstrom's operating keyboard for me."
"Keep at it." "Thank you, Carl." I had taken over Siskin's ready room for my interrogations. As Thonius signed off, there was a knock at the hatch. "Yes." Frauke opened the door. He took a low stick out of his mouth, exhaled a plume of smoke, and said, "Ready for Siskind?"
"Yes, Whiston. Let's have him."
I'd saved Bartol Siskind until last, gravely aware of what Dubot had told me under interrogation. Siskind had blood links, remote, admittedly, but still real, to one of the sector's more infamous heretics. For a while I'd kept telling myself it was just a coincidence. Then I'd thought about it more carefully. It didn't have to be a coincidence. Though long aborted, the Cognite Academy and its mentor had enjoyed a profoundly wide influence. The last time I'd checked, about 2 years earlier, 94 cases under prosecution by the Ordo's Helicon had involved someone or something with Cognite connections. As secret orders went, it was one of the largest and most pernicious in modern memory. Also, the Cognite had prided itself on using and recruiting only the very brightest supplicants. It was no low cult, feeding off the poor and the uneducated. Lillian Chase had not only pulled into her influence the Imperium's finest, she had instigated several eugenic breeding programs that mixed her corrupt but brilliant genes with the bloodlines of the most promising of her students. Her offspring were everywhere, many of them unimpeachable men of high standing. To be a rogue trader, one needed savvy, smarts, and panache. Just because Siskind was of her line didn't automatically mean he was a heretic himself. Siskind entered the ready room. He looked flustered and unhappy. Frauke had given him a smoke, and he twitched it in his fingers. "Sit down," I said. He sat, and had to adjust the setting of the chair. He wasn't used to sitting that side of the captain's desk. "Bartol Siskind?"
"Inquisitor?"
"I give you notice now that this interview will be conducted mentally. I recommend you relax, or it will be a painful episode to endure." He took a drag on his low stick and nodded. "How long have you been master of this vessel?" The clarity of the first Psi query made him blink. That always happened. No one is ever quite ready for the voice inside your head to be anyone other than yours.
15 years.
"Before that?"
I was first officer on the Kagemusha.
And how did you come to command the Allure? Though uncomfortable, he smiled.
I won it in a card game.
I verified his truth centers. He wasn't lying. How long have you known Kizari Thekla? He shifted in his seat.
30 years, give or take. We were juniors together on the Vainglory under Master Ensman. I moved to the Omadorus and then the Kagemusha. Thekla went to the October Country under Master Angwell. When Angwell died, Thekla inherited command.
When was that?
381. Summer 381. Angwell was old. 400 and some. He died of a fever.
All true so far. Siskind was playing ball. I tried to examine his mind. Curiously, it reminded me of Dubose. Superficially bright, sharp, fit, but strangely turgid deep down. When did you last see Thekla?
I told you, 3 years ago on Flint, at the Winter Great Moot.
His first lie. It was glaringly obvious. He couldn't hide it. When, really? Siskin sighed. He drew on his low stick again, exhaled and looked straight at me.
2 months ago, briefly. On Lenk.
The truth. Describe that meeting. He shrugged.
I was in a tavern, drinking to the birth of Bomberson's first son.
Bomberson? Your chief engineer?
That's right. We were rat-assed. Thekla came in with some of his crew, bought a round to wet the baby's head. We chatted for a while about old times. Nothing...
His voice trailed off. This was more truth, but I was annoyed at the opacity now coating his mind. You're related, you and Thekla. Siskind laughed.
He's a distant cousin, but our lineage is all frigged up. You know that, or you wouldn't be asking this. Our parents' parents were connected to the Cognite school raising program. I'm not proud of that. Shit, I'd rather it wasn't the truth. This isn't the first time the Inquisition has pulled me over because of things my frigging ancestors did.
Also true. True, as I could see. Thekla sent you a communique asking you to make apologies for him at the moot.
Yeah. He couldn't make it. But when you've got good contacts with a slaughter baron, it pays to be civil. He didn't want to piss Carquin off, so he asked me to smooth things out.
Do you know why he couldn't make the moot?
He didn't say. I didn't ask.
Do you know why I'm after him? Siskin paused. He breathed deeply.
Yeah. It's about Flex, isn't it?
It is. What can you tell me about Flex, Bartol?
Not much. It's a suicidal trade. I mean, dealing Flex is going to bring trouble down on you eventually, right? He wanted to cut me in, but I said no. I move a little grin. Sometimes I run Gladstones. But not Flex.
You've never dealt in them?
No, sir.
Never tempted?
By the return, frig, yes. But I knew it would be bad news. Damn, look at this. I'm being mind-probed by the Inquisition for not dealing them. How frigging bad would this be if I was?
He had a point. Where does he get them from?
I don't know. Seriously, I don't. You only get to know if you join the cartel.
There's a cartel. He flinched slightly, causing the long char of ash accumulated on his low stick to tumble off onto the polished chrome floor. He knew he'd just let onto something he hadn't realized I didn't know. A cartel, Siskind. He recovered smoothly.
Of course there's a cartel, Inquisitor. The Flex trade doesn't depend entirely on the October Country.
I never imagined it did.
Far as I know, there are about 20 rogue traders who do the run. The source is extra sub. It's coming from somewhere out in Lucky Space. And before you ask, I have no idea who runs the operation, or how it's run, or anything. You buy into it. That's what Thekla told me when he tried to get me in. It's a contract. You get all the details when you buy into the cartel. There's an upfront payment, a deposit, a gesture of good faith.
How much? He stubbed the low stick out.
750,000.
That's a lot.
Yeah, right. That's a lot.
He was still telling the truth, as far as I could chart. But suddenly I saw the real bald reason he wasn't a part of his distant cousin's flecked trade. It wasn't principle. Siskind couldn't afford it. 750,000 was beyond his means, and he was resentful about it. The resentment filled his mind in a very readable blur of spiky red. "What's Firetide?" He blinked and laughed, about to lie badly.
"I have no idea."
"Yes, you do. Firetide drinks as usual. That's what Thekla said to you." Siskin tilted his head back and opened his arms wide.
"You're reading my friggin' mind, you bastard. Tell me."
"Tell me." The psychic jab snapped him upright and made tears well in his cruel eyes.
"Okay. Oh, friggin' Kay. Don't do that again."
"I won't, if you don't provoke me. Tell me about Firetide."
"I want another smoke."
His mind was muddying up again, hardening to my scrutiny. It was peculiar. I felt my interrogation was going well, but still there was a sense he was giving me answers from a free part of his mind, while the rest was impenetrable. "Wiston," I voxed. The door hatch slid open, and Frauke came in. "Low stick for Master Siskind," I said. Frauke pursed his lips and plucked the carton out of his jacket pocket. He offered it to Siskind, who took one. Frauke flashed his igniter and lit Siskind's smoke, then lit another for himself. "Sometimes I thank the God Emperor of mankind for sealed unit respiratory filters," I said. The comment passed Frauke by. "I'll be outside," he said, exiting. The door hatch slunked shut. "You've got your smoke," I said. "Now tell me about Firetide."
"It's a festival. On Bonner's Reach."
"That's out in Lucky Space."
"Yeah, 5 days in. From here, 2 weeks. The last free trade station. We used to meet there at Firetide and have a drink or several."
"Thekla was expecting to meet you there."
"Hoping is a better word. We've done Firetide every few years. It's a chance for rogues to catch up, away from Imperial scrutiny."
"Why was he hoping to see you there?"
"Just to catch up."
I paused. "I contend, Siskind, that the message was clearly an instruction for you to meet him there."
"Think what you like."
"He was telling you to come there, wasn't he?"
"Yeah, all right, he was."
"Why?"
"I don't know. And that's the truth."
"It was. Tell me why that might have been." Siskind looked down at the floor.
"I think he was hoping to recruit me. Hoping to try again. The cartel meets at Bonner's Reach. I've been doing well this season. Thekla believed I could buy in."
Every word of it was the truth. I couldn't understand why I felt every word of it was also somehow rehearsed. "Do you think that Thekla, having passed on the Flint Moots, might have gone directly to Bonner's Reach?"
"That's likely,"
he said. "Master Siskind, I'm now going to withdraw my agents from your vessel and leave you alone. Thank you for cooperating with the Inquisition. Do not cross us again."
"I'll try my frigging best."
"For your information, I have had my people disassemble your communications array and your mass drive regulators. Nothing has been damaged. I estimate it will take you 4 working days to refit the systems. My apologies for the inconvenience, but I don't want you following me." He smiled. "You're a total bastard," his mind said.
"Thank you, Inquisitor."
His mouth covered. Drive engaged. The hinterlight began to describe a hard, tight trajectory out and away from the distant sun of the Flint system. The allure, temporarily crippled and adrift, became an increasingly faint, hard return on its aft sensors. Ravenna glided down the midship's companionway, with Nail, Kiss, and Zale trailing behind him. Apparently, Nail had promised the boy a look at the bridge. Halstrom was waiting for them at the bridge hatchway. "Mr. Thornius and I have done some research, sir," he said. "It took some rooting out of the database in conjunction with the Cato Imperialis, but we dug up Firetide. It's
a festival on Bonner's Reach, due to begin about 20 days from now," Ravenna said.
Halstrom wavered.
"Oh," he said.
"Just because I got there first doesn't mean I don't appreciate your efforts, Mr. Halstrom. Well done." He beamed.
"Thank you, Inquisitor."
"How's the mistress?" Nail asked.
"Pissed off, Mr. Nail," Halstrom said.
"But doing it anyway."
"Yes," said Halstrom. "Course is set. Drive engaged. We're heading out into Lucky Space."
Kiss and Ravenna went in through the hatch and moved across the bridge to join Sinia Priest.
"Thank you, Sinia," Ravenna said.
"For what, Gideon?"
she snapped, gruffly. "For doing what you didn't want to do. For taking us out into lucky space." She looked up from her main station grimly.
"I don't like it, Gideon, not at all. But I am in your service, and while that lasts, I do what I'm told."
She paused, and then smiled.
"I understand Mr. Hallstrom is pretty keen on this whole venture."
"I think he is," Ravenna agreed. "Sinia, you might describe yourself as a rogue trader." She halted, mid-action, and looked hard at the armored chair.
"And? Where are you going with this?"
"If I gave you 750,000 in ready cash, just how rogue could you be?" In the bridge doorway, Zale looked up at Harlan Nail.
"Why is it called Lucky Space?"
he asked. Nail grinned a not at all reassuring grin.
"Because once you're out in it, you're lucky if you last 5 minutes."